Take your seats, please. I want to start the show. Yes, you're in seat 23. No, that's 24. You're in 20. No, that you now you're sitting in 25. It's 23.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
That's why the seats are numbered.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Unbelievable.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. What did you think it was?
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. Thank you. Please indeed make yourself comfortable. And you are in seat 23, not 24. Could you move over one seat, please? Oh, man, what is it with these people? We have a small studio audience of 6,273 people. And for some reason, this lady in seat 23 is sitting in 24. Would you please move? God. How are you, though? How are you, the one intelligent person that listens to this show? Thank you. Well, yeah. I was not a great student. Boy, was I not a great student. It's not that I'm stupid, much to your dismay. It's that I just didn't care about learning that stuff. I was so other-directed. If you listen to the shows, you know that my mind has trouble staying on one subject for an extended period of time. My mind wanders all over the place. I used to sit in a classroom in grammar school in sixth grade, and my mind would wander out of the classroom and end up in the Himalayas somewhere scaling a mountain. My mind just took off on its own. I spent more time staring out the window than I did learning, or even, I didn't even know who the teacher was. I just, my mind was just focused on the window. The window and the clock. The clock and I became very good friends. I watched every single second on that big wall clock. There was an electric clock on the wall, big, big wall one with a big face. And it had a second hand, thank God, gave me something to do. And I just watched every second tick by of my entire childhood in school. Second by second by second. I was fixated on that clock. Then when I got out of school, I wanted that clock to stop. When you're in school, for me, I wanted time to go really fast, really fast. Come on, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. Come on. Come on, come on, come on. 3 o'clock, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. Come on, clock. Come on, let's move it. Then when school was over, I saw that the seconds on the clock were still going kind of fast. And I said, no, slow it down, slow it down, slow it down. Okay, now slow the clock down. I guess you can't have it both ways. The worst subject in school for me was history. And I know a lot of you really loved history because it was things that people actually lived through, and it was the development of our world and our country and our peoples and our societies. And it is quite fascinating, but not to me. I only care about what's now and what's tomorrow. I never, ever look out behind me, which is why I've tailgated so many cars there. I don't look when I back up. I don't care about what's behind me at all. Unless something's approaching me rather quickly with an iron bar, then I'll turn around and take evasive action. But I usually don't care what's going on behind me or what happened in the past. So I was really bad at history. And there was too much stuff. There's too much stuff to learn, you know, in arithmetic and math and stuff, you know, in English, you know, it is what it is. You learn it, you're done, you go home. But with history, it never seems to end. I mean, like, you got to learn, like, centuries of stuff. And people find that fascinating. Like, did you know, Ron, back in 1802, that there was a man who went into a grocery store and fell down on a piece of Cheerios or something and sued the store? What do I care? What are you telling me this for? Do you know that in 1727... a man named Chesterfield McCall actually invented the first ice pick? No, I don't care about that. That's his problem. If I need an ice pick, I'll go to the store and buy one. They probably got one at the dollar store for a buck. What do I care who invented it? Why would I need to know that? That would be awfully pretentious if I went around in life spewing out facts of things that happened in the past to people. They'd find me incredibly annoying. Ron, thank you for the coming to the cocktail party, and thanks for the bottle of wine.
Oh, you're very welcome. Did you know that in 1807, a man named Chesterfield McCall invented the first ice pick?
Get out of my house. What's wrong with you?
It's true. I
never cared much about history at all, ever, ever, ever.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology.
I don't know any biology. I know when I'm touched in certain places, I feel really good. That's about all I know about biology. I remember in biology class, there was a skeleton on the side, which I don't believe was actually a skeleton that the biology department bought. I think it was actually the carcass of a kid that died in the room. I have that feeling. And we actually dissected things in biology class. We dissected a crayfish. I still don't know what a crayfish is. I think it's made out of cray paper. And we dissected a frog once, and then we had to take its organs and pin them on the side of the board that we were chopping the frog up with. And that was absolutely disgusting. I don't know if they do that anymore in school, but I mean, I really took offense to that because I don't like going around cutting into animals. To me, that's not an education. That is pretty much murder. And all the frogs were stored in formaldehyde. So, and that's not a smell that I love. I suppose if you're going to become a funeral director, then, you know, start embalming bodies, and I guess that's a real sweet smell to you. But to me, embalming fluid and formaldehyde is something I'd rather not breathe into my lungs as a child. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. So I really wasn't into that either. But history never got to me. However, I thought that today we would go through some interesting history things, but not in the sense of things you didn't know, but in the sense of things that have been taught to us absolutely wrong. There's no question that history classes and history itself is, for the most part, a bunch of incorrect facts. They're not true. And we don't correct the history because it's too, what's the word, bothersome? For example, July 4th, that's coming up rather soon, huh? July 4th, the Declaration of Independence. You familiar with this? You familiar with this document? Donald Trump doesn't know what it is, but you should be familiar with it. Here's Here's the deal with this. Well, first of all, here we go. It turns out that we've been celebrating Independence Day, July 4th, on the wrong date. How can you celebrate July 4th on the wrong date? let's celebrate July 4th today. Well, it's really July 8th. What? What are you talking about? How's that possible? Independence Day, we're celebrating it on the wrong day. While it's true that the delegates of the Second Continental Congress adopted the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776, they didn't sign it on that date. Most of them signed it several weeks later on August 2nd. So Independence Day, technically, is August 2nd. Oh, well. What are you going to do? You're not going to change July 4th. I mean, come on. I mean, even from a religious standpoint, I think most people realized that supposedly Christ's birthday, this Jesus thing that we discuss every once in a while here when we go to a church, Jesus' birthday is not on Christmas. It's not on December 25th. But I guess we bake a cake anyway. I mean, but you can't change it now. It's too late. We don't even know when Jesus rose to heaven or wherever he rose to. We don't even know that that's the proper date. You know why? Because nobody was there. Nobody was there. People disagree on when these things occurred. But you know what? What's the difference? Who cares? Who cares? I mean, if you believe it happened, it doesn't matter when. I mean, as you know, on yesterday's show, I said, I don't care about birthdays. I don't care about dates. This is stupid. It's really stupid. Here's some other things in history that we got entirely wrong. Entirely wrong. Charles Lindbergh, you know him. They call him Lucky Lindy. He was not the first pilot to fly nonstop across the Atlantic Ocean. That's what we credit this Charles Lindbergh guy with. The first guy to pilot across nonstop across the Atlantic Ocean. Well, and Charles Lindbergh, indeed, he flew 34 hours from New York to Paris alone. I mean, congrats. Good, nice job. But he wasn't the first to do that. He wasn't even the second to do that. Not even the third, not even the 50th. Lindbergh was the 85th man to make that same trip. The 85th. But yet in history we're taught he was the first. No, he wasn't. He was the 85th. I counted him. The real first people that did that journey were two British pilots, John Alcock and Arthur Brown. They made the journey in a plane in 1919, flying from Newfoundland to Ireland before crash landing. Oh, well. Well, can't have everything. Fine, okay. Alexander Graham Bell, you know this guy? He invented the telephone? No, he didn't. No. He wasn't the first person to invent the telephone. He was the first one to patent the telephone, but he didn't invent it. Actually, an Italian immigrant named Antonio Meucci was the rightful inventor of the telephone. In 2002, after a long battle with historians, the Congress finally gave credit where credit was due. It wasn't Alexander Graham Bell. Oh my God, no, he patented it. Wow. I had that one wrong. You know about the Titanic? Saw the movie? Heard that annoying song over and over from Celine Dion? It's accurate, but not entirely. Apparently, well, we know that the Titanic sunk in 1912, was done in by an iceberg, but not entirely. apparently, weeks before, there was a fire down below on the Titanic, and it burned for quite a period of time and did quite a bit of damage to the hull. But the ship remained intact, and the fire was put out. But it weakened the hull of the ship. When the ship hit an iceberg, the hull was weakened from this extreme fire that had occurred weeks before, and quite severely. And that's why the Titanic sunk. Yes, it hit an iceberg, but it also hit the portion of the hull that was already damaged. Did you know that? Leo and Kate didn't know that. Are you familiar with the Underground Railroad? It helped thousands of slaves escape into free states and also into Canada during the 19th century. But most people think that the Underground Railroad was actually a train system. No, there was no train under there. A lot of people think that there were tunnels through which these people escaped. These slaves escaped through this underground tunnel system. No, no, there were no tunnel systems. There were no secret rooms or networks of tunnels. That's wrong. In reality, most slaves ran out of towns in the middle of the night when it was dark outside. And they coined it the Underground Railroad, but nobody knows why. It was just people running around at night trying to escape. Wow. You know Napoleon, this short little bastard, stuck his hand in his jacket and, you know, there's the Napoleon complex. Short people think they're bigger than they are, so they overcompensate with their annoying personalities. Well, that part is true, but Napoleon's part wasn't. This is interesting. We thought that the French Emperor Napoleon was a very, very short man. Actually, Bonaparte was 5'7" tall, which in those days was considered to be quite tall. At least an average height, but even larger than that. His autopsy apparently listed him as 5'2" by mistake. And that's when the myth began, because he was actually 5'7". But he wasn't really that short. And in all the paintings and all the artwork after that, he was depicted as this short little crazy man. No, he was an average height, if not taller, crazy man. George Washington, first president of the United States? No, he was the 17th. No, he actually was the first president of the United States. But we all know that he chopped down a cherry tree. I didn't see it. Nobody knows about that, but that's the fable. But even more so was the fact that George Washington had wooden teeth. And we all think, well, back in those days, that's probably the best they could do. So people who lost their teeth had wooden their teeth. And what a horrible, horrible thing. Well, George Washington did not have wooden teeth. George Washington, it is true, had many serious dental problems that resulted in the loss of his real teeth. He never wore wooden teeth. Washington, back in those days, teeth were made out of ivory, gold, and even some teeth from animals and other humans. They transplanted human teeth. They had all that stuff. And as George Washington was the president, he certainly didn't have to have wood put in there when they had things like gold and ivory that they were using. Wooden teeth would have been much too painful and were rarely used. And when they were on very poor people who couldn't afford anything but to shove wood in their mouth. So, no. No. The Vikings. Do you remember the Vikings? Sure. You remember them. You used to play football with them. The Vikings wore helmets when they were fighting, as our soldiers wear helmets when they're fighting. But the Viking helmets apparently had horns coming out of them. No, not true. Viking helmets did not have horns coming out of the helmets.
That was created later on as fable and myth because they wanted to depict the Vikings as these horrible, horrible, violent people. So they came up with the horns. But there weren't any horns. That was not true. We hear about Rome's Nero. You know Nero? He played the fiddle, apparently. He was an emperor, and he fiddled while Rome burned. Well, not true. The fiddle wasn't invented until the Dark Ages. This was like well before the fiddle was even invented. The violin wasn't around. On top of that, Nero had been a very ineffective leader. And at the time of crisis, this entire story is false. Nero wasn't even in Rome when it burned. He was in a city that was up to 5 to 10 miles away. So he wasn't even in Rome. And he didn't play the fiddle. The fiddle wasn't around. Well, I hope you found that fascinating in some small, ridiculous, insignificant manner.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it, too. But sometimes he says bad words.
We're going to speak to our guest for today right after this public service announcement.
Are you aware that 1 in every 7 Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
Hey, Ron.
Good morning.
Good morning. Eric Wenin, who's manager of corporate relations with Honda, and Natasha Watley is a Team USA softball player and Olympic gold medalist. How are you?
Doing great, thanks.
Doing good. Thank you.
I think Eric is the guy, Natasha is the girl. I'm getting that right.
Okay. All right. You got it right. Yeah.
I like to start properly. Okay. We're talking about honoring collegiate women's sports, and I understand some awards are taking place.
Yeah, yesterday we had the Collegiate Women's Sports Awards, where we honored the very best and the best of the best in collegiate women's athletics, and honored Simone Manuel, swimmer from Stanford University, with the Honda Cup as the Collegiate Woman Athlete of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how does one qualify for these awards?
Well, they're honored throughout the entire academic year in 12 individual sports by simply being the best of the best, not only athletically, but academically and in their communities as well. And from that group of 12 is chosen a top three. Yeah. And from the top three comes the Collegiate Woman Athlete of the Year. The program also honors the top athletes in Division II and Division III, as well as the Honda Inspiration Award winner, which is given to an athlete who's overcome physical hardship to return to play.
And how many awards are given out?
There are 15 awards.
Okay. And does that include a car, Natasha?
Does not include a car.
Does not include a car.
But it does include a great experience over a two-day span. Yeah. All of the athletes are flown in and given first-class treatment. So nice. It is worth it.
It is worth it. It's worth it after all. So what is it like to hobnob with the other award recipients?
an awesome experience. I was the winner in 2003,
yep.
And so just getting the chance to get to know this 2018 class, I mean,
yeah.
They are super diverse, full of personality. Just being able to hang out with them and hear their experiences and just all of their accolades combined,
yeah.
I mean, is intimidating to anybody. So it's been a great couple of days hanging out with them, and always a great event and fun experience.
Okay. Now, Eric, so what, is it based on stats, or what are the what is it based on?
You know, the one thing you really learn by spending some time with them is that while they all excel in athletics, that's only just a portion of what they do. They excel in the classroom.
Yeah.
They give back to their communities. One of our winners is preparing to head on to medical school. So they're tremendous individuals, as Natasha was saying, and they're going to succeed in life, you know, regardless of what it is, whether it's athletics, whether it's professionally or personally.
Yeah.
So it's really a wide variety of accomplishments.
See, I'm always confused and also enamored by the ability to be so focused on a sport that you reach that level of excellence, and at the same time, your head is also in your studies and your academic phase of your life. I mean, that's like a hard juggling act. Those things individually are hard juggling acts.
No, absolutely. I mean, being a student athlete, I mean, you're just being demanded 100% of the time from every angle, whether it's your professor, your college coach, weight coach. Nutrition-wise, you've got to be on top of your game. You know, you're having late night studying, so I mean, you've got to eat good food. I mean, it's a hard lifestyle, and definitely prepares you for life after college. You know, any challenge hit your way, you feel like you can handle it because you were a student athlete in college, that's for sure.
Well, everything seems easier after that, I would guess.
Right? Yeah.
I guess the one thing it teaches you is time management, because I don't know how you pull that off.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely have to have your priorities straight and be super regimented, have a routine. There's no way you can survive without being without having time management, for sure.
Yeah. So do you know of a percentage in general of which athletes go on to professional or semi-professional careers and which ones become academically, like you say, some are studying law and to be physicians, et cetera? I mean, where does that split take place?
You know, that's a really good question. And looking at the entire group, many of them also have national team aspirations, whether they've competed already.
Right.
Like Simone, for example, is already an Olympic medalist as well as a national championship swimmer.
Right.
Many of you know, some of the tennis players are talking about going from here, going on to the professional tour.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it really varies. It really varies.
I guess it's a question of opportunity.
Exactly, and there's a real testament to the growth, I think, of women's sports is over the years that they really do have these, you know, national team opportunities, professional opportunities, as well as, you know, their chosen careers as well.
Yeah. See, interesting, because in like Olympic endeavors, they're usually individual achievements, or can be, and in other sports and athletic endeavors, it's all about team. So it's interesting, like, where one's head goes, like, I want to be the best I can be, and then I want to make the team as best as it could be. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think that's just being an athlete.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
As an athlete, you just want to be the best of the best, whether you're individual or team.
Yeah.
And I think that's just that competitive spirit, just wanting to be the best at whatever it is that you do. So I do think being an athlete and going on into the professional world, it definitely isn't an asset being an athlete, because you have that competitive spirit and just, I'll figure it out and I'll get it done.
So, right, which also lends itself to, I mean, if you go into occupational career, you want to be the best doctor you can be, you want to be the best carpenter you can be, et cetera. So it kind of carries out.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, where do we find the list of these honorees, and where can we get more information about it?
Well, you can visit the website at collegiatewomensportsawards.com and also check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Okay. Now, I know I have no chance of getting any of these awards because I'm not female. Is that the reason?
Oh, are you in college?
Yeah, well, there's another one. There's a long line of reasons why I can't do this.
You're stuck now.
Well, congratulations to all of them, and Natasha, of course, to you as well. And thank you to Honda for making these recognitions possible, as well as being the corporate sponsor for that. Pleasure speaking to you.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Will you join me then? Well, before I answer, I'll answer for you. Yes, of course I will, Ron. I can't wait to be with you again. I know. I'll see you tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace. Huh? Yeah, right? You know what I'm saying? I think you do. Make sure you take all your belongings with you. If I find anything here after you've left, it's mine. So take all your belongings. Now. Go away. Take your belongings with you and go.